Today's episode of Trackin' Food on the Mid-Range Podcast Network is brought to you by Scout. If you're wanting to learn more about Vancouver's food and cultural sphere with regards to community news, new restaurant openings, essential guides to some of the city's best offerings, as well as who's hiring, Scout is where you should go. You can find them at scoutmagazine.ca. That's scoutmagazine.ca. And if you're on Vancouver Island, they also have a sister website called Islandist. Same type of content, only island-driven. That's islandist.ca. We're proud to have Scout as our presenting sponsor, as we believe what they scout out is an excellent complement to what we're offering here on Trackin' Food. Do check them out. Once again, that's scoutmagazine.ca. Welcome to the Trackin' Food Podcast. You're joining us on a very frigid Vancouver afternoon today. My name is Jamie Ma. I'm your host as always. Joining me via a nice Zoom call. I can see his face, but unfortunately we're not sitting in the same room, is my amazing co-host, Mickey McLeod. How are you doing today, Mickey?
Doing pretty good. Yeah, it's cold outside. Can't complain, you know. Enjoying some nice tea right now.
What are you drinking?
Keep warm. I'm drinking a combination sage and honey tea right now, which is actually no caffeine, which goes against one of my rules. My tea has to have caffeine in it in the morning, but evening, of course, can have no caffeine. But this one, something about the sage really perks me up there. I don't know if you've ever had sage tea before.
I have not.
Tea, like a mix between mint and like rosemary. It's like kind of in the middle of that.
I woke up this morning and got a nice text from my family back home in Saskatchewan. And right now it is minus 50 degrees.
Wow.
And it was plus one when I looked at Vancouver temperature. So that's a nice 51 degree discrepancy. So I sent them a lot of laughing emojis. So I... I thought that was kind of interesting, but yeah, it's nice to chat with you. I haven't seen you in a while. I'm just gonna put out there to anybody out in the universe, the reason why we haven't had an episode since our last episode with Taylor. So anybody out there didn't check out our last episode we did in early January with Taylor Chvodiak about the shift change, do check that out. We haven't had a podcast for the last month. I got COVID pretty much like a couple days right after that, and I was pretty sick. I was out for pretty much 3 weeks, and I had a fever for 11 days. I was really, really ill. I'm all better now, but yeah, we apologize for not having an episode. We had to cancel two episodes in that time, but we're very excited to be back today. We have an amazing guest, someone that I was very excited to chat with. We've been in discussion with having her on for about 2 months. Her name is Grace Kennedy. She's the owner of Live Light's Zero Waste Delivery Company. It's a new company here in Vancouver. They just started this past year in August. So it's a zero waste company doing really cool delivery stuff in Vancouver, really cool stuff. And, yeah, we just chatted with her. How was that? That was pretty fun.
Super fun. As we mentioned in the show, listener, which you will be listening to shortly, I kind of started my zero waste journey a little bit ago in September, and I've been finding it really challenging. I mean, I think everyone who is a conscious, you know, normal human being is trying to reduce what their, not only what their waste is, what their carbon footprint is. So it was very inspiring and enlightening, some of the detailed stuff that she was talking about. And yeah, I love all that stuff, man. And I just want to say, glad you're feeling better, buddy.
I know, it was brutal. Oh, it's the worst. Just sitting at home for 3 weeks and just like, there'd be days I would go to bed at night and I would wear a t-shirt because I was so cold. I could just never get warm. And then I would sweat through like three t-shirts a night, and like the shirts would be just like soaked, like you were coming out of the shower. It was just...
Yeah,
not a fun experience. Luckily, I didn't lose my smell or taste. I don't seem to have any lingering long-term effects. Like a lot of people, it sounds like the long haulers when it comes to COVID. But yeah, no, not a fun experience. But yeah, no, I'm happy. I feel good. I'm happy to have recorded with Grace today. She was awesome. She was super cool. I'm really, really keen to see people like her who are you know, really not afraid to take on challenges like this and really put out. Sounds like she really wants to have a, you know, really ethical, good company. And yeah, we were really excited to chat with her. So
it was cool. It seems like that those two things, sort of like the food delivery model and the zero waste packaging model, kind of make sense together, don't you think? Like, especially living in a post-COVID world where our connectivity from a global standpoint has shrunk back to a more of a community-based sort of like thought process. And for me anyways, in my personal experience, it just seems like they go together really well because, you know, if we can't be out enjoying socializing at restaurants, stuff like that, at least we want to be able to support them by delivery. But if that delivery is their packaging, that's even better. And then I think when, you know, companies like this start coming up, it's kind of going to be a sort of a positive cycle of incremental change because, you know, in order to get on with one of these companies, you're going to have to offer a no packaging product. And like, you know, maybe half of your stuff at first, if you're a restaurant, can be zero packaging and then, you know, moving forward with that. So to me, the whole concept seems really like a really interesting pairing and a positive pairing. And I'm surprised there's not more. Like, I mean, she was saying that there's more, obviously in a place like New York and California, there's more, but for us in Vancouver. And I was saying as well that Nada being our first sort of like mainstream zero packaging restaurant, it just seems like a place like Vancouver should have more. So I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. And I think she's definitely hitting, I think they're coming out at a really great time. I think, you know, with people working more from home and people being more attuned to doing stuff from ordering, you know, getting more used to ordering stuff online. I think the idea of just getting grocery delivery, I don't think it's something that's going to be so, you know, if you talked to some 10 years ago, the idea of grocery delivery is probably a very kind of weird thing. I think buying groceries is definitely a very personal thing for a lot of people. The tactile, seeing something in person is something that people are more used to. But I think the concept of ordering food to your house, delivery, especially now that we're doing it more often with restaurant delivery, ordering your groceries home, I think it's definitely very convenient, something that's very accessible. And companies like LiveLite, I think, is something that, if they can do it in a very sustainable and economical and also, you know, low footprint way, I think it's perfect and it's amazing. And we're very excited to have got them on, and I hope wish them nothing but the success that they hopefully deserve and attain. Do check out this episode. Grace is fantastic. As always, you can find us on Scout Magazine, our presenting sponsor. You can also check us out on our website, midrangevancouver.com. We haven't had a Beats on Repeat episode for a little while now, but it sounds like Mickey and Tristan are going to be in talks to be doing one of those soon. Hopefully. Yes, maybe.
Maybe. We'll maybe. See.
And then, we've got a lot of great content up on the website right now. We are consistently putting out our Mid-Range Weekly, which is a great thing that we're very proud of. We urge you to check that out and subscribe. And we hope you enjoy this episode with Grace from LiveLite. Grace Kennedy of LiveLite, thank you for joining the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Jamie and Mickey, for having me.
Yeah, no, this is, we're very excited to have you on today. We were brought in contact with your, I guess, marketing manager. Is she your like number one? What, Emily? What would she be?
My number one, my number two. Yeah. She's
all the company you guys got there, but we're very excited to chat with you guys. No, she got in contact with us back in December, and I had never actually heard of you. I'm going to be honest about that one. But it sounds like you guys are, how long have you guys been around as a company?
We have not been around for very long. We just launched our e-com site in August.
Okay.
So how many months is that? 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah, so you guys are a brand new company. You guys are, so basically anybody out there who's curious about what we're talking about today. So Grace runs a local food delivery company, and it's a zero waste packaging food delivery company.
Yeah.
You decided to open up and start a business during the pandemic. Are you crazy?
Well, in some ways, like it can kind of feel like that. Backtracking a bit, this was not a business I conceived of during the pandemic.
Okay.
This was something I came up with while I was at home on mat leave. I have a 2-year-old, and I used to, go out a lot, eat out a lot, you know, just enjoy Vancouver. Wining and dining kind of thing. And then when I had my son, I was all of a sudden homebound and starting to, you know, cook more, clean more at home, you know, do all the house duties. And I've always been like, I won't say like a devout like environmentalist, but like aware and kept up to date kind of thing. But like, again, I'm not like, I use my bike, and I do have a conventional gasoline car though. I'm not, you know, extreme environmentalist or anything like that, but I'm very interested in solutions that are accessible for like more people and that ease the way we like treat the planet, but also take into account that we are creatures of convenience and used to really easily solutions, like whether it be, you know, take out plastic cutlery, you know, all the things. I mean, we're not really into plastic water bottles anymore, but that was a thing for a long ass time. Anyway, so I'm at home seeing like, you know, not just the diapers, but all the like plastic. I'm learning about how only like something like 7 to 9% of plastic in Canada gets recycled. Okay. So the rest is like going overseas to markets that like don't really exist anymore and therefore ending up in oceans. It's going to landfills. It's not being sorted properly. It's not being cleaned properly. It's like super complicated, but that's a huge amount of plastic that's like going nowhere, not to mention what, where plastic comes from, right? Or how it's derived. So I'm learning about all this and I'm seeing that we have a few really awesome businesses in Vancouver that are already offering like zero waste grocery shopping. And that would be the soap dispensary on Main Street, which is like the OG refillery, where you can go take your own containers and get them filled up. Or there's Nada, zero waste grocery as well. And I definitely tried to use those options. But at the time I had like a kid who's like breastfeeding and like strapped to me. And I was like, I can't like carry these containers and go here. And I think I was sharing a car at the time. And I was like, this is just really, really difficult. And I'm sure there's people that can like make it work for them. But I was like, there's no fucking way. So that's what got me on. Like, there's got to be a way. And again, it's not like this isn't an original idea. We had milk delivery back in the day where we'd swap out glass, right? Jugs. And we have Avalon Milk in BC that is, you know, I think they use something like 90% of their glass milk jugs are reused. And people are bringing those back to grocery stores and getting their deposit back that they pay when they buy the milk. So it's not like a novel idea what we're doing. And there's companies in the States, you know, in California that are seemingly blowing up doing this. There's ones in Brooklyn. There's a few of them in the States that are trying to, you know, really see this idea to fruition. So yeah, so I don't stand to say that like, this is like something we came up with or I came up with. Anyways, I decided to go and start this. COVID hit and, the health authority, which does, you know, food safe inspections, is like, it's COVID and you want to like get approved to use like reusable glass containers. Like, no way. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. Like it's phase one, right? We're like all in like hyper. We don't know how this virus spreads. Everyone's like sanitizing everything. Like we later find out it's what more of a airborne, you know, like we understand it more now.
Airborne transmission probably is probably what you're going for.
Yeah. That surface transmission is not what we're like primarily concerned about. And I was kind of like to the, you know, thank God for the restaurant industry being able to like at least still have, you know, even though it was to a lesser capacity in-person dining, because I'm like, you know, we haven't made all restaurants change to using like single-use cutlery. Like fine dining restaurants are not, they're still using their cutlery. They're still sanitizing equipment. We're still drinking from glasses in restaurants. So at the end of the day, what is the difference of us sanitizing glass jars, taking them back, sanitizing them, compared to eating in a restaurant and using cutlery? And it was still a no for a while. And I kind of just had to like, be like, okay, there's so much work to do on the business regardless. Like I'm not ready to get going yet, but like, I do need health approval at some point.
Is that a big process? Like, who do you have to go through to get this, all these things approved?
Like this for health, the health, well, it's the same as, like a health safety inspection, or food safe inspection in a restaurant. There is legislation, under the province that in Vancouver Coastal Health are the ones that oversee it, to make sure that restaurants and anyone handling food is complying with it. But it's quite broad legislation. At the end of the day, it's geared to ensure that no one gets ill from food and with the consumer or end user in mind. But a lot of it's left up to you to prove to the health authority that you are doing your diligence, following their guidelines around sanitization. But for our business, like it's like quite unique because it's just a totally different process than what you might find in a typical restaurant. So it was me, you have to put together a plan and sent it to them, and they got some special approvals because of this container deposit system, which is just not, you don't see it that often. And finally, when phase two came in, I believe, yeah, they were like, okay, like I'd been kind of like leaving a whole bunch of voicemails and like calling different people and like, oh, like someone's got to get back to me on this eventually, but you know, not being like too much of a pest, like never get it approved. And then finally they're like, hey, we're going to consider it. I think it also helped that we already do have like those businesses in Vancouver that had been taking back containers. So like there was some precedent.
Okay. First off, I'm just going to go back to a couple things. First off, Nada is a company that Vicky's mentioned on this podcast a million times over. You love that company, am I correct?
I love Nada. I have been there many, many, many times. I was really stoked because I think they've been open for 2 years now, but I was also very saddened by the fact that we didn't actually have a zero packaging grocery store before that. I mean, obviously you mentioned the soap dispensary, but you look at how many zero packaging waste stores there are in places like California, places like New York and stuff like that. So I was really excited when they opened.
The other thing is I love how the idea for you to open up, start this business came about being a stressful mom and like all the vagaries that come with that. And as a man, I have no idea what that feels like and I never will, but I commend you for having the foresight and the kind of the ambition to be like, okay, I need to figure out this problem. And that's really cool. How much research did you have to do to just get this off the ground? I mean, like, my brain is just, that's the one thing I've been trying to wrap in my head. It's just like the logistics of you're having to work with suppliers and like what you're going to have to work with, like products and like probably have to have, do you guys have a big warehouse you guys deal with like to put everything in?
We have a warehouse in Eastbound and we are currently, we are looking for a larger space.
You're already growing.
We're growing, and we also recognize that for people to be able to do, we haven't put in a minimum order yet. Okay. And who ordered from us? Did the trial order? Was it?
I did.
Okay, Jimmy. So we only have about 150 products right now. And that might like seem like a lot, but like, you know, the average grocery store has like thousands and thousands of products, right? And we're used to so much choice. And we don't want to put in a minimum and be causing people to have to be like, oh, like what else can I add to like get to that minimum? Like we want it to be easy for them to like fill their cart and have this delivery come. And, you know, it obviously needs to make like, you know, financial sense for us that the delivery is big enough, because there's a lot of overhead when you're running a delivery company, not to mention like the environmental aspect of it is like, you know, you don't want to be driving across the city to deliver like, you know, one
cookie.
Exactly. I'm laughing because Jamie had just a few things, but you did choose. What did you? You also got coffee, right?
Coffee, and I got two cookies.
And we didn't give like a big. I don't remember what the credit was, but anyways, we gifted Jamie a bag, and you know, like you could either have got like a whole bunch of little things, but you know, the coffee, you got coffee and some expensive cookies. Anyways,
I don't even drink coffee. I got it from my girlfriend, so I thought it was really funny. I was like, what do you want? And she's like, I'll get some coffee. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, I'll get. She's like, what else are you gonna do? I'm like, I'm gonna get two cookies. And she's like, you're an idiot. And I was like, all right.
Hey, but the coffee. See, I think the coffee is a great choice because coffee typically comes in non-recyclable packaging, right? Like it's like very like that vacuum pack, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And our coffee comes from, I know we're totally going astray from what we were talking about, but it comes from Agro Roasters, which is like an Eastbound roaster on Clark. They do a lot of roasting for other awesome companies like they do Livia's, which is that awesome bakery on the Drive, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with. They're awesome. And we get our coffee from them in like big returnable steel pails. So there's like no packaging waste in our supply chain. So we get these like big pails from them and then we like send them back when they're empty. And then we're just giving it to you guys either in, you can opt for a glass jar with your coffee or in a paper bag, like way less footprint than a conventional coffee purchase from the grocery store. So I do love talking about the coffee.
I love the coffee. I love getting in the glass jar because it's kind of nice. You're like, oh, this is super cute. And it's just like something you can easily just put right on your counter and it just sits right there and it looks nice. Yeah. It's packaging. Yeah. That part I was pretty stoked on. For you guys, when you're looking at developing this business, is it something that you want to just work with local? Obviously you want to, the footprint is obviously something it sounds like you're really cognizant of. Are you going to try to maintain to stay within kind of the, you know, the greater Vancouver area when it comes to working with suppliers and stuff like this? And just kind of like, this is the area. I mean, we're lucky enough where we live in BC that you're going to be able to get amazing products all the time. So we're, especially with our local produce and stuff like this and fish. Is that something that you are going to try to sustain and build relationships like that? Am I correct?
Yeah, 100%. Like there's not really to genuinely do this. Unless in situations where it's something we don't currently produce, like locally or in Canada, which is like, that is the case for, like, we have quite a few products that we don't produce in Canada. And in that case, we would use like a local supplier who's like importing goods, like, you know, talk about like quinoa, like we have some quinoa like grown in Canada, but it's very small compared to like where global, like quinoa is coming from Bolivia, for example, or like coconut milk comes from Thailand. And like, it's already canned at factories in Thailand. Like we're talking about mass scale of some of these products that we don't have, you know, control over the supply chain, especially being so small. Kind of going back, Jamie, to your question about like the logistics around this and the research we did, you know, there's a certain amount of research that goes into it, but it's also so specific to every supplier, every product. There's a lot of logistics that go into, especially the more difficult things to carry, like plant-based proteins. We're talking to a lot of local companies. We're, as you guys just said, we're so fortunate in Vancouver to have so many plant-based food producers, restaurants and food producers. So there's a lot of options out there to talk to about how are we going to like take what you guys are already providing in grocery stores and provide it, you know, zero waste to our customers. That's a big thing on our plate right now, because right now we don't carry any meat products at all. But plant-based meat alternatives is where we want to go next, so that people can be able to order more like full meal, ingredients from us. That's the goal next. So with the whole like warehouse thing and getting a bigger warehouse is like, I won't exactly say the number we want to get to, but it's, we want to be able to have a, like a curated selection that you don't feel like there's not enough choice. But it's also not like going to the grocery store and being like, why are there like 30 types of capers? Like, we don't need 30 types of capers. Like, but the other thing I'll mention is that we also have been working hard to, just because we're package free, we do care a lot about the brands that have been created locally, and that we're carrying their products. Like they've, you know, they've put a lot of creativity and effort into the way their brand looks on the shelves, the way their brand looks on social. So wherever possible, we like, you know, try to uplift and support, and we want to do more of that. For example, are you familiar with like biota fermentation?
I'm not. I don't know if you are, Mickey.
Yeah. Look them up. They do like, they do kimchi. They do like nice, like pickled curried cauliflower, kombucha, grainy mustard. It's all made locally. It's like, you know, it's reasonably priced, which we find like awesome. But their labels are gorgeous. And like their labels are really, really beautiful. But of course, and they work really well with us and what we're doing, but we don't put their labels on things, right? We put like a Live Light label, and then we write like biota. We don't pretend it's ours, but just the way they do it, you lose the branding aesthetic. So that's a bit of a, I won't say it's a bit of a challenge, but it's something we recognize that is like important for especially local producers to differentiate their brands and to not lose sight of like of that, and that it's not like it's not all Live Light product, and we don't pretend to brand them as our own.
Is that something that you could maybe look into, where if you're working with the companies, they can send you kind of like stickers or stuff like this, or stuff that you could kind of, you know, I mean, obviously that's adding cost to them and probably adding cost to something there in that.
Yeah.
Is that discussion where you guys are maybe looking?
Yeah, we actually have done some co-branded labels, and we have done them with Biota, the one I just mentioned, as well as Island Nut Roastery, which is where we get our nut butters from. So we've done it. We are just trying to figure out long-term if it's, with the amount of labor in what we do, we're trying to figure out if it's like feasible long-term, and for like the sticker runs of all these different like SKUs, I think it will be. We just haven't gone one way or the other yet, but we actually do have some co-branded labels at the moment.
So another question I think you were talking to me before we went live here, and we can go back and forth on this one. Do you have a background in food or restaurants or community or business or anything like this? Like, what's your background in before you started?
So my first job was working in a small town grocery store in a little town in Manitoba. And it's still my favorite job to date.
Really?
Just, oh yeah. Just like, It was like a small, medium-sized independent grocery store. And I was like, what, like 15, 14, whatever it was. And I just like, it was, you know, out of town, kind of cabin country. And it was, I don't know, super relaxed environment. You're working with all your friends, it's like the summer, whatever. But that's where I got like my first taste of like, kind of like ordering, like restocking inventory and stocking shelves and like, kind of like, you know, understanding consumers' demand in the summertime for hot dogs and marshmallows. That was where I first started out. And I worked a bit in marketing after that. I worked in social work. I spent some time in the downtown east side. And we're not there yet as a business, but my last job was working in employment in the downtown east side. And one of the goals of the organization I worked with was to find accessible jobs for people that weren't too labor intensive and could be like short shifts that, you know, again, were like accessible. If you're starting to enter the labor force, after maybe some time away from it. And this is kind of like a dream of where this business could go. But I was like, I initially was hoping that LiveLight could turn into also like accessible jobs. We found it really hard when we were trying to form partnerships with restaurants in the, you know, in Gastown and that kind of thing is like, you know, the jobs they'd want to hire people to do were like dishwashing, and like dishwashing is a really hard job, but it was like the entry job for a lot of the restaurants in the community down there. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're just like, there seemed to be a really like a shortage of jobs that I felt were accessible for the people we worked with. Again, like whether or not we'll get there, like I'm fine. I'm learning a lot that like, you know, running my own business and, you know, when your margins are small and you're starting out and you're like, shit, like we don't really have, like, there's not a lot of tolerance for risk right now. We're not at that point where we can be like, just like, you know, we can, you know, train people, put a lot of training in and support, which is what I from the experience, that's what like, you know, the people, needed that I was working with. So we're definitely not there yet. But that is something I would wish to do down the road. We're talking years out, but.
You know, it's funny, you put those two things together and they just make so much sense, talking about versioning young businesses using the resource that we have, whereas it people that need rehabilitation or it's the homeless or people who are in the system. And those two things, when you say it like that, just make so much sense. So it's really cool that sort of thought process is happening. Like, what can we use in our current community resource pool in order to like, strengthen our community, right?
No, I think that's definitely commendable, and I think it's something that we should. I think a lot of people in businesses, especially with a lot of stuff that we see here in the downtown east side, and especially that we deal with in London, Vancouver, I think a lot of companies, probably restaurants especially, probably want to, but probably sometimes are nervous to, don't know how to. And like you said, working in the industry is not necessarily easy for some people to just really kind of walk into. I mean, I've done dishwashing; it sucks. I did it for one night. Worst job ever. And they left me there till like 4 a.m, didn't know what I was doing. And yeah, I'll do that again. And I've done grocery like late night where you have to stock the shelves. I did that when I was like 19. It was paying me $6 an hour back in 1999. I did it for 3 days. It was the worst job ever.
I just want to clarify for people listening that Jamie Ma just said that he did dishwashing and it was his entire scope of his experience was one shift.
So, of course.
Just like, not let that pass through time without.
It was a Friday night. There was supposed to be two dishwashers. One of them didn't show up. I was the first guy. They just threw me back there. The restaurant was super busy. It was a place called Kelsey's in Saskatoon. And then.
Kelsey's?
Yeah. Kelsey's. Well, one night, I guess. And then I get there, and then, like, they're like, yeah, you're going to be by yourself. Like, it's so busy. And then, like, they close at 1:00. All the bartenders and staff and manager all out front getting drunk, wasted. And then they come back there at like 3 a.m. They're like, you're still here. And I'm just like so behind and I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. And I just stormed out and I was like, this is the worst job ever. And I counted how much money I made. I don't know. Was it like 9 hours at like $6 an hour? Fucking wasted. So yes, I dishwashed for one day and I'm never fucking doing it again. For a living. I have so much fucking respect for you. Yeah. So anyways, that was my rant. Rant over.
Classic Jamie. It's a very hard job, man. You got to be organized. There's a skill set that some people can do and some people can't for that. So, but I, again, like to reference it back to our situation in our community, which is the downtown east side, And we're talking with Taylor last episode about using and giving those people those opportunities to get into the workforce. And like, as you said, like not this traditional framework of a workforce that we've been kind of force fed throughout our entire lifespan, which is like the 40-hour work week, the 8-hour day shift. Like those aren't realistic hours, I don't think, for people in those situations to be able to execute. So we need to like start reframing and rethinking like how we go about realizing these things.
A lot of other things that I'm kind of curious about what you guys do here. So you probably like the investment of getting the company off the ground is probably somewhat substantial in some ways. You probably have like, are the jars and all the things that you use to put all the live light stuff, is that kind of a partnership that you maybe work out with the companies that you work with, or is that something that you have to already provide and
ready to go? It depends. Some of the things, and this is where I'm actually hiring right now for a sourcing specialist. So if anyone's listening, this is the kind of stuff you'd be working on. So, you know, we initially started off by some of the products like peanut butter. We initially got like these massive tubs of peanut butter and we're trying to dispense it ourselves. Like this is like day one kind of thing. like, can you guess how fun dispensing peanut butter is? Scooping peanut butter into jars?
Well, you're talking to a person who eats 2 pieces of peanut butter toast every day for breakfast. So I'd be very excited. I'd probably eat half of it before I leave. yeah, I can see how messy that would be.
Nightmare. I'm like, we're not doing this anymore. So for certain products, and consider that we're also sourcing jars. So instead of sourcing empty jars, what we do now is with certain suppliers, they fill the jars up. So Island Nut Roastery fills our jars up for us and then sends them to us already filled up. And then if those are the same model of jar that we use, so we'll take them back after. And the amazing thing about glass is glass can be like cleaned entirely. People have asked us, you know, why aren't you using some kind of like one of the plastic container types that is a little more highly recyclable? Because there's certain types of plastic that are easier to be recycled than others. But like, you know what it's like to like clean out that plastic container that's like, I don't know, stained in pasta sauce or like still smells like something, you know, like it's just like glass doesn't do that. So that's like the awesome thing about glass is it can be used so many times. And people also kind of wonder like, oh, is it going to break, that kind of thing. I've had like, I think I've dropped a lot of jars. They bounce. I've had like one break, I think. I'm not saying it can't happen, but they're like, they're pretty sturdy. So yeah, in certain cases we work with the suppliers who use the same type of jar that we use. They're like the same ones that Earnest Ice Cream uses, which actually Earnest Ice Cream, we consulted with early on about jars. They're awesome. and they have a deposit system. So there's we have such a great food production community in Vancouver.
Do you encourage people, like obviously part of the business, part of the idea is that people order products from you and then return them, right? Am I correct? Is that,
yes. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should have cleared that up earlier. Yeah. Like, you can, things obviously like olive oil, peanut butter, kimchi, they're going to come in a jar. There's no other option. And in the price of buying those things, a $2 deposit is built into the price. And when you are done with those jars and we deliver your next order, you can leave them outside for us and then we'll credit your account back for the jar deposits that you've returned. Other products, say lentils, nutritional yeast, rice, those kind of things, we by default send them in a recycled paper bag. So it's like a very light paper bag that's made of like 100% recycled materials. And you can choose to have that packaged in a jar and pay an additional $2. The reason we do that is that it's the whole, like the footprint part around glass, paper, what's better, you know, for the environment, metal, all these things. Like there's no clear, it's different in every case. And glass, while it can be reused a lot, it also has a higher transportation footprint because it's like quite heavy. So we don't necessarily think there's like one, you know, there's certain things that we should stay away from. Okay. Like lots of types of plastics, especially single use plastics, but in terms of a really thin, like uncoated 100% recycled paper bag to carry your lentils in, like that's a pretty low impact, item. You can like reuse it at home to wrap something else in, to put your compost in. Like those are really great additives to home compost. And they can, yeah, if it's food stained, it can go in the compost. Otherwise, it can go in recycling, you know, use it for like a sandwich bag or whatever. But yeah, so we have those two different options.
Another question I have for you is, because you're a company that's definitely working towards having a low footprint when it comes to, or zero footprint, I guess, when it comes to Canada's kind of commitment towards, because Canada put out this thing, I think last year, they want to have a goal of zero plastic waste by 2030 when it comes to like single-use plastics. There were some statistics I pulled off the website basically saying that Canadians throw away 3 million tons of plastic waste each year. Only 9% is recycled. I think you talked about that earlier. 29,000 tons finds its way into our natural environment. And I think the big one that a lot of people don't realize is that we don't really recycle in Canada. We pretty much used to just ship it out to China, which they stopped in 2018. And I think the CBC did a kind of a big marketplace to kind of discover thing back in the fall, showing that like because China doesn't do it anymore, they're shipping it back to us. I think we had to deal with that problem last year. And then I think we're trying to find other countries like Singapore and like the Philippines to do it. But it's a problem. Usually what happens in those countries, they just burn it. And I can say that with 100% accuracy, because when I was in Vietnam, they burned everything when I was there. So, I mean, that's definitely a thing. But does the Canadian government offer maybe incentives or grant programs for companies like you to get you guys off the ground? Is that something that you've been in have you guys been in touch with the government like that?
Yeah, we haven't thus far. A lot of, and I haven't looked into it. And that's also because we like had a bit of, investment to begin with. And so we were okay for, you know, being in our first year kind of thing. And you know, we're not, the stage of some of these like big startups that are like, you know, trying to raise like, you know, millions right away. We need to look into it, potentially, but I don't know. I'm not sure what there is for smaller companies like us. Like, I think there's a lot for larger environmental tech, maybe like systems that are going to like, you know, take that plastic that's here in Canada and recycle it into like plastic pellets that then is used to make like, I don't know, outdoor furniture or whatever. I know there's a lot of innovation happening around there, you know, and then when it comes to maybe like wind power or other types of alternative power, I don't know though. I have not done my research on that of what there would be for something our scale in Canada.
No, I apologize. I was more just looking. I hope it would be nice to see them kind of pushing towards like companies, what you guys are doing. And I, you know, it's something that I think we all talk about. I hope it just turns into something that's prevalent in all grocery stores and that this is something that maybe we should, you know, as Canadians, and we should be definitely looking at. Are you going to look to partner with restaurants, you know, and working with the community in that way? That's something that
we're totally open to it. And I mean, we're not partnering with any explicit like traditional restaurants at the moment, but we have partnered with a few places like Kula Kitchen. Are you familiar with them?
Not.
Kula Kitchen is, I believe they do delivery and then they also do retail products. And I actually should know this because they're one of our partners. I don't know what they did first, like pre-COVID. They are out of one of the commissaries. And I don't know if they were doing delivery out of the commissary pre-COVID with retail products or how that came about. But we, so they're kind of like, that's getting towards, you know, restaurant. They're already doing food delivery, which I guess is what kind of everyone's doing these days, right? Or a lot of restaurants. I definitely see the potential. Chow Veggie Express is in Vietnamese. And I just sampled it. Oh my God, that's another great thing. If anyone wants to apply for the sourcing specialist job, you get to try food all the time. so we are, they do, yeah, vegan Vietnamese, super interesting business that like they've been a Vietnamese restaurant for a long time, but not always vegan and, you know, not getting with the times, but seeing that like, you know, that's where, you know, how, I think more like how environmentally just it is to change to more plant-based alternatives. They've gone totally vegan and they have amazing, amazing spring rolls and they do a vegan fish sauce. So we're going to definitely the vegan fish sauce. You probably will see soon at Live Light. And then they have so many other great products. We actually have to just like decide, like we have really limited space right now, like what SKUs we can bring on. So I guess we kind of are already with a couple.
Nice.
Products. Well, yeah.
No one can see this right now, but Mickey's face just lit up with all the vegan talk. This coming out of Mickey's a vegan, by the way.
Well, like I said in our last episode, where everyone's going to be vegan by like 2030 anyways, right? So, yeah, it's really cool you guys are pairing with. And like you were saying before, the choice we have and the selection of not only plant-based products, but plant-based places you could eat is astronomical in Vancouver. Very, very lucky. here.
I ordered Chow Veggie actually delivery. It was fantastic. It was great.
I went down to Granville Island, me and Emily Ann actually, to, we're like, but I don't know what we were doing that day. We might've been on a little bit of a food tour. And we went down to have Chow Veggie Express to like, you know, just confirm that we've like tried the different things. And cause I had talked to Maria, I don't know if she's the owner or part owner, about all, you know, the process and how we could work together. And we go down there and, you know, get our food. And it was like, Granville's kind of like, kind of busy right now, but not that busy. So they have like a food, they have a, like a station there, right? But it was like, I don't, have you guys been down lately and seen like the bird situation?
No.
The seagull situation?
Was it bad?
Oh, it's so bad. It was like out of a movie, like the sitting outside and eating there right now is like, I guess people are feeding them a ton. The signs are like there's tons of signs right now, but they're like on your table, swooping at your head. It was like, I was like screaming the entire time I was eating.
Fucking humans, man. I think the SPCA, BCSPCA deems that now animal cruelty.
Yes.
To feed birds.
Yes, there's signs that say that.
So cruelty in the sense just like you're teasing them? Is that kind of what it is? Is that what you mean?
Well, with the whole bread thing, they can't, their stomachs aren't built to handle that kind of expansion that happens in your stomach. So when people feed them breadcrumbs, like it can lead to death, like almost instantaneously once they start to digest it.
Yeah. Well, I live in Chinatown and sometimes you see the geese just going everywhere. And there's like hundreds of them just like walking and they'll just take over an entire area. And yeah, I mean, I don't see anybody feeding them, but I didn't know that the situation that I never go to Granville Island. I mean, I gave up on Granville Island years ago.
A lot of goose shit.
So, yeah.
Like everything.
Sorry that happened to you. That sounds like a pretty...
That's not harrowing, yeah.
How was the food at least? Was it good?
Oh, it was so good. And then just like a reminder of like the what do you call it? Not the tenants, but the producers and the delis and who's there. Like, remember pre-COVID, we'd all be like, you know, mushed against each other, like wanting to get our stuff. And then it's like, you know, like we're like, when you're like waiting for your number, right? And now like COVID times, it's like, like, can you imagine being squished up against like, these people? Such a, yeah.
That, I mean, I will say, Oyama sausage is probably one of the few reasons why I love going down there.
Yeah.
Like, what's the reception you've gotten from your customers? Do you guys get a lot of feedback from people saying like, we would like, and I'm not only talking about like what you deliver to them, but like in the sense of like, kind of like the market that you're trying to get into, in the sense that like, I think we're starting to realize now that recycling is pretty much useless. That big oil misled us for years. It's interesting. The NPR posted a really interesting essay back in September talking about, titled How Big Oil Misled the Public into Believing Plastic Would Be Recycled. And there's this interesting quote that I pulled from it. It says, industry has never intentionally misled public about recycling and is committed to ensuring all plastic is recycled, which is total bullshit because they haven't done any of that. The intentionally part is total bullshit and then committed. I mean, what does committed mean? But when you guys are doing what you guys are doing, what's the feedback that people are saying? Are they saying that this is kind of a hard transition for them? Is this kind of weird for them? Like, I think the big one, I think for a lot of people probably is diapers. I think diapers is probably going to be a big problem for our...
Well, before you answer that question, I just want to say to preface it that I started in September to try to go as zero waste as possible as I could. And me personally, I've found it super, super challenging. Like, I got the bamboo toothbrush. I did the toothpaste thing from Nada. I did the packageless deodorant. And like, I trying to wrap my head around the things I use every day that have packaging. And for me personally, someone who I consider myself to be very committed to sustainability and moving forward. And I found it super, super, super challenging. And then like, there was a point where I was like, fuck, I'm just going to give up. And then I've come obviously back around, but that's me personally have gone through the sort of that challenge.
So that's what I'm trying to get at is like, rapidly, like you've lived a certain way your entire life and just getting your brain to rethink what's the feedback you've got from that, I guess, from personally and also running this business?
Yeah, no, I love this question because I think this is a big part of who we are at Live Light. So like our mission is just to help people start shopping zero waste. And there's a quote out there, her name's evading me right now, but she's like, we need millions of people doing this imperfectly, not a few people doing this perfectly. Okay. I am absolutely not 100% a zero waster. I cannot pretend to be. My little dude's wearing diapers. Like, the conventional diapers. I'm not doing the cloth diaper thing. That's the number one source of waste in my house right now. And hopefully I'll probably treat them soon. But yeah, it's, I'm not doing that. And you know, that's based on, like, for me, that was, I previously did not have in-suite laundry. Like there's a whole bunch of factors about my life that just made it like not really make sense to do cloth diapers. At least I couldn't see how it would make sense. Okay. So for me, that's a big one. So no one has to do zero waste perfectly. There's so many things that you can just cut down on that single use plastic packaging wise, without, like, there's no need to go 100% zero waste. It's not attainable, as you said, like Mickey, it's like how, like, yes, you can do it, but you would have to devote so much of your time and energy to doing it. So is it to get overwhelmed and to think like to be discouraged by it because you can't do it 100% is futile. We need to be like, you know what, can I do this? Like, can I start with 10%? Can I go to 25%? So with Live Light, like every new pantry staple or product that people go through a lot, like we see that as opportunity to decrease one less like package that you would normally buy in your house. And that has to either go specifically to the package depot, if you actually get it to the soft plastics depot, which again, what's happening to that plastic? Like, we want to do the research so that when people buy from us, they're trusting in us that we've made the decision that like, this is going to get like recycled or can be returned, or this has the lowest environmental footprint when you're shopping with us. And that, you know, if we've opted, for example, and this is just an example, if we've opted to sell cans of coconut milk, it's because we've recognized that coconut milk is already being exported in these cans. Metal recycling is actually good because instead of mining for more metal, we want metal to be recycled, right? Like, it's so much more destructive to be extracting more metal than recycling it. So there actually are some we have to be realistic with what our world demands. We have laptops, we need, like, you know, we need metal. So that's something we like want to promise our customers is like, we're doing the research on this for you. And we've minimized waste in the supply chain. And getting back to your question about how it's been received, you know, some people who probably already using like the soap dispenser and Nada, and maybe they have like, you know, kids now and are like, this is awesome. It can be like delivered. They're like very easy to start doing like weekly big orders with us to restock their pantry. Some of my friends who are just really busy in work and definitely care about the environment, but they don't have kids and they're kind of like, they'll still like, you know, order food in, but they also really get behind this. And for them to become like, you know, weekly purchasers, like it might be a bit more of a challenge to get that routine happening. And, you know, there's also things with like our website that we're like, how do we make this as user-friendly as possible, as like, you know, least cumbersome as possible for folks. So it's been mixed, but a lot of people, I think they love the fact that they can use a jar and it's going back and being like reused again. Like, it's so simple, but it's like kind of awesome. And I know I get really pumped looking at in my pantry and like seeing when I'm done with something that like that jar, even if it's a jar that doesn't come from Live Light, I'm keeping the jar, I'm putting it to the side, and then I get my like refill in the recycled paper packaging. Say it's like, you know, 2 pounds of rice or whatever. And then I'm like refilling my jar at home with it. And there's very little plastic packaging going out of my house at the moment. But there are things we don't carry. As I said, there's the diapers. The diapers are still going into my garbage.
Are you open? Would you be open to like when one of your delivery drivers comes to pick up old jars and stuff like this, if people had like different types of jars, like their own personal jars, would you guys be willing to take those as well? Or is that?
Yeah, we've been asked this before, and I think it's something we need to consider more deeply. The reason we have said we haven't done it now has to do with like our portioning and our process, because right now we have just like two standard jar sizes, which are like a 2-cup and a liter, and then the bags. So that's why we haven't. There's also difficulty with like labels, getting like making sure like the labels and like the sticky part of the labels like not off. And I also believe that for being more accessible to like the wider population who might be a bit on the edge about trying this like reusable jar thing, that there's a bit more kind of like trust in the like aesthetic of having the same jars that we know how to like properly clean. One of the things people get a bit not nervous about, but are kind of like, oh, I'm going to order olive oil in this wide mouth jar or a vinegar. They're like, why don't you have like a nice sauce bottle? Well, the sauce bottles are really labor intensive with our current practices to make sure they're cleaned properly. That's why everything we carry is in a wide mouth.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, consistency is probably something that's probably important. I mean, I think we can attest to that with Earnest. I mean, everyone, you just see that jar, you just immediately think their branding right there. I think that definitely makes sense. What can you guys cover right now when it comes to delivery? Is it just Vancouver or can you go to Surrey? And Mickey lives in Carisdale. Can you access him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all Vancouver proper. And I believe we'll be in North Bend next. We're trying to figure out what to do because we're definitely, as you said, like you hadn't heard of Live Light before. A lot of people haven't heard of us. Yeah, I think North Bend will be next, but we also have a lot of work to do in Vancouver in terms of just people knowing who we are and getting our, actually, you know, marketing ourselves. So
do you have a big fleet of delivery drivers?
It's just one right now. Oh, sorry. The van or drivers?
Drivers, van, either.
Yeah. We have one full-time equivalent driver at the moment and one and the ability to like deliver all days of the week in Vancouver. But it's just one little Live Light van.
I love this. I love the small, cute, the boutique, you know, starting. Yeah. You're doing something that I'm so scared to even think about the idea of starting my own business. So I have so much respect for what you're doing here and the fear, but it sounds like you guys are definitely on the, I love the website, by the way. I mean, the website's super easy to use. It's really cute and it's really streamlined. It's pretty simple. I liked your guys' story. It's pretty chill. I think anybody that jumps on there, I think it won't be a very difficult process for them to start accessing products. What's the number one seller right now?
The number one seller is the CSA bags. So the community supported agriculture bags that are actually, we purchased them from Harvest Community Foods and Burdock and Co. that organizes them. So that's the fresh, that's the bulk of our fresh stuff that we sell right now is curated by the awesome Gabe at Harvest. So she reaches out to it's 8 to 10 different farms every week. So what's in season all comes to Harvest Community Foods and then they divvy it into, I don't know how many, like hundreds, it almost seems like every week, bags. And we take orders for those and then deliver them for we obviously charge a bit more. But people love getting the in-season produce. It's the same kind of stuff you'd find at if you went to Burdock and Co. and ate there in person or, you know, the farm table restaurants we have in Vancouver, you're getting all the cool veggies.
Oh no, I live right around the corner from Harvest and my good friend, Mike Shum, he gets the CSA bags. He's been getting them for years. I live alone and I find if I got those, I feel like some of it would go to waste because I work a lot and I don't think I would have enough time to eat everything, but I've seen him get them. And when I bike down Union and I see when they're doing the CSA bag day, there's hundreds of them. Like it's just, the whole store is just like lined up with these bags. So they're really cool. I think that's something that's really great. It's a really great way to connect with the local farmers and kind of get all their produce out there. And it's nice because when you see the bags, you open them up and it's just like, you don't know what you're getting, but it's just like, it's always random, awesome, delicious produce. So I think that's pretty cool. I was hoping you were going to say peanut butter.
Peanut butter is definitely up there. Oh, nice. It's for sure up there. Probably oats. People love oats.
are you guys going to look to get because I know you were saying earlier, you were thinking about doing, you don't have any meat yet. But is that something that you guys are going to look to get on there? Are you going to start with meat alternatives like Beyond Burgers and Impossible Meat and stuff like that? Or
yeah, I don't. That's a question mark right now. I kind of don't. I don't. Again, I look at. I don't buy. I buy meat sometimes for my son to just because I'm not. I feel like I'm not an informed enough plant based person to know to know how well rounded the nutrition should be if we're just plant based at home. So he does like that. And I know he gets it at his other house. But I also, as you guys said, by 2030, everyone's going vegan. So do we need to have that at Live Light? I also think that again, I'm a little bit biased because I live in East Van where we have butchers that people are going to go to Columbus or what is it called? Pasture to Plate?
Yeah, Pasture to Plate.
Yeah. So, okay. We already have Bosa or whatever. Right. So people are kind of used to going to walk and do this. And I guess I probably in Kits, in downtown, we have that too. So So like, do we need to be doing that? Or like, is that the one thing that people can kind of like go and get fresh somewhere else? I don't really, to be honest, I don't really want to be managing fresh meat.
The great thing about being your own boss, though, there you go. You know, it's interesting when I was doing a little bit of research about like kind of the footprint model when it comes to stuff like this, when it comes to, there's some things here I didn't realize. So bananas take 2.5 weeks to decompose. Milk cartons, you guys have a couple milk cartons, right? I think I saw oat milk on your thing.
Okay. So I'm going to be really honest right now. And like, we kind of fucked up on our recycling research. And I'm like, I believe I need to be honest about this because, we need to set a precedent and people are smart and we need to, yeah, just be totally upfront. So what happened is we are looking for people. We're like, we need oat milk. We want almond milk, but you know what? You know, eventually maybe we'll just have oat milk because oat milk's taking over. Oat milk is made from Canadian oats, like grown oats. We have Earth Zone, okay, in Burnaby. So for us, Vancouverites, to get that, it's like a really low footprint. Like that's like, it's awesome compared to dairy milk. Oh my God, we've come so far. But when we were speaking to Recycle BC, we're looking at the fact that there's not really any locally produced oat milk or almond milks or nut milks. Like there's a couple, but their best before date is like really, really small. Like it's really hard for a small company to be able to get that moving, right? If they're going to turn really fast. So we were like, you know what? We're going to bring in cartons, which is not a packaging type we have committed to, but we're like, we're going to do this for now until we find a way to do like kind of what Avalon does is fill up our own jars, but we haven't found that producer yet. So if anyone knows someone who's making oat milk locally, and Earth's Own's too big. They're too big of a company. They already can't meet their demand. We have approached them, but they're too big to consider little like folks like us who want like, hey, can you guys like refill our jars? They're like, yeah, right. So we brought in the cartons and we had talked to Recycle BC about how they're recycled. And they said, yeah, like milk cartons and milk alternatives have been transferred from the deposit like depot program, which is different for other things that are like non-essential, non-essential food products. It's been transferred to the curbside program. You can put them in your blue boxes. But in all this transferring of information, we thought they were recycled domestically here in BC, where they're like, I don't know, heated up, made into some kind of slurry. They take the paper one way to a mill and the plastic stuff, you know, goes somewhere else to keep getting recycled, or maybe it doesn't get recycled. But I think like 70 or 80% of these cartons is paper that can get recycled. Turns out, I found this out on Friday, and we've already launched this product and said, like, we stand behind it, that we actually export all these cartons, the plastic lined ones that are for shelf stable items to India. To a mill in India. So how much assurance do I have that that's actually like being used in that end market? I've done more research into it now. In the States, going to Mexico, the footprint to even just move the recycling, like let's talk about that, you know? So we are, as soon as we sell out of that, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board on how to authentically, you know, sell low footprint nut milks or milk alternatives. I mean, in some ways, this is again, like this is a, as a company, we need to decide, like, as I was saying, like oat milk that's made here, like produced here, came from Canadian oats. Like it's already far more of a lower footprint than dairy milk. Mm-hmm. You could analyze this stuff to death, right? Like, and then, but the packaging shit. So like, what do we do? But that's just an example of like these challenges we kind of work through.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to catch you on that, but I,
oh, no, I already like, it's like, as I said, this was just something we figured out and I'm like, oh shit.
I commend you for understanding that and still doing the research and realizing, you know what, that's not something that we want to partake in. And, I think that's really cool. And I think, anybody out there listening, I think would highly respect you guys for having that integrity. And it's, you were correct to say that. I mean, oat milk is definitely the all the rage. I mean, at the hotel, it's pretty much what everybody wants when they're thinking about going away from milk itself. But it's interesting. I find it very fascinating as a like that we export this stuff. That Canada doesn't want to do our own recycling. In fact, we're just shipping it out to all these third world countries. Well, I shouldn't say India, third world, but probably second world. But I mean, that we don't want to invest in our own technology and stuff like this. So. hopefully that's something that's going to change. But yeah, and I hope maybe someone out there listening who makes oat milk, maybe they can help solve your problems. That's obviously something that sounds like you guys we're getting a lot of requests for, right?
Yeah. People are just like it's so popular. I know that oat milk is actually doing as well as from an insider at one of the producers. It's doing as well as almond milk on the market. And almond milk's been on for how long? And oat milk is already I don't know if it's surpassing it, but it's there.
Yeah. Amazing. So what I was going is bananas, 2.5 weeks, milk carton, 3 months, plastic bag is 50 years. Soda can, I didn't know this one. I thought I was shocked by this one. Soda can, 80 to 100 years. And then plastic bottle was 450 years. It's like, I don't know. Anybody out there, food for thought. What are some of the worst products that people can buy in your research? What are some of the things that people should try to avoid? Pretty much is any single-use plastic, stuff like that?
Well, you know, things in like excessive packaging, you know, that create a lot of like plastic packaging waste. Like one thing that really grinds my gears is crackers. Like the crackers that are like plastic in a tray and then have like plastic on top. And there's so much plastic that is like people don't know what to do with. So it's either like maybe going in the blue bin and then just getting tossed to a landfill because it should have gone in the soft plastics that goes to like a depot. You know, like just the overly packaged things that are like individually essentially packaged things within plastic packaging. Okay, bottled water. We have amazing, I think we have great drinking water here. I mean, some people from like smaller BC towns might not agree. But you know, when you've been to other parts of the world where that's not an option, you are like, why do we buy single use water bottles? I thought that was going to be banned. Was that not supposed to be banned?
I don't know. I think the pandemic kind of pushed a lot of things in the past. I think straws were supposed to be universal in Vancouver, supposed to be banned, I think, this year, but I think they pushed that back for another year. I think the pandemic's kind of fucked with everything. So, which is, understandable to a point. I mean, people are struggling and there's a lot of stuff going on there, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's one. We have I don't want to bash any like companies that are, you know, innovating and have like, you know, awesome brands and they're, you know, like they're doing, creating jobs and doing awesome things. But we have a few like kind of more like niche, like oat milk products that we're importing. Okay. When we import things that like we can make here, like that, like, and I won't get into economics at all. I'm sure someone could fight me on it from the other side of things, but we have like Earth Zone that's being made in Burnaby. And then we have a few products coming over from like, I think the UK. And it's like, did they for sure like imported oats from Canada, made this oat milk, like, you know, slapped a brand on it, like we're importing it back here. It's like, that's kind of crazy to me. What I love about in-grain pasta, and don't get me wrong, there's a ton of amazing pasta made in Italy, but in-grain pasta is in Deep Cove. They also have a restaurant there, but their pastas are on the shelves at a lot of stores in Vancouver, like a lot of the chains, but we carry it in bulk. But it's made from Canadian traceable grain. And then it's like slow dried in Deep Cove. And then, you know, it was produced here. It was, grown here, produced here. And then like it's staying here as opposed to like going overseas, our grain, and then getting made into pasta and coming back. And I get that like someone's going to be like, well, not everyone can afford to eat locally produced pasta, right? Like it is not as cheap as that 99 cent spaghetti that's coming back from Italy. And we could go down the road into like all the factors that, you know, create that. But that is one of the things that I'm like, it's kind of crazy when, you know, or we're like importing pickles, you know, like we can make pickles here.
Yeah. Any local macrobiotic style stuff, man. But I think it's frustrating for me as well. I think it's frustrating for a lot of people, but we really should be trying as hard as we can to eat what's in season. Right. But again, it's difficult. Like you said, we can go down the rabbit hole, but we've talked about it on this show many, many times. But I think with companies like yours and conversations that we're having now about these really important topics, we're sort of started slightly sort of through the conversations, we'll be able to sort of make some slow, gradual change, and that's, you know, I again want to mirror the point that you made. It's not about going zero waste right away. It's about taking those steps to sort of making sure that you can sustainably progress to a point where maybe possibly you will be 90% zero waste, or just having that mindset of taking baby steps to get there. So, and eating locally is a big part of that.
Well said. Last question, and then we'll get you out of here. Future goals, short term and long term.
Yeah. No, short term is definitely trying to get some of those. Emily Ann, our marketing brand partner, she's like on my ass about like how she can do more shopping with us because like some of the basics that she goes through, and she's like, you know, gotta get these. But like, cheers to her for doing that. it's making it easier for people to shop with us without feeling like, oh, is this like too small of an order? And us being able to put in an order minimum so that like, you know, financially for us, that's important, of course. And as well as like keeping a balance of being able to support local producers and also keeping our prices accessible. We're not going to be no frills. We can't be. But I also don't want to be cringing at the cost to buy like zero waste crackers with us. Okay. So that's like, yeah, short term, just getting the product count up. Long term, I guess just building in innovation around how to make this, really a model for that can be, I hope, contributing to like tech that makes these kind of systems, refilleries, economical and accessible for people. And that it's not just a thing that like only people with a lot of cash in their pocket can access. Yeah, just kind of can, contribute. I don't think that, our business model could be how it is for, the next 5-10 years, but like, I'm not necessarily like committed to what it is today. I think it needs to adapt and do whatever it can be to just be more widely accessed. It's larger. It's beyond us.
do you think you'll want to develop an app?
An app?
Yeah.
Possibly. The reason we didn't do it to begin with is an app is like so expensive to develop. My buddy that works for the web development agency that did our website, they're called The Hatchery, by the way. They're awesome. It was just like fourfold what we had to put in initially. And we're still at that point where we're like, oh, do they want this functionality? Do they want that? Is this something, what do they want? I don't know if I'm old school in this, but to me, like an app is like, there's a certain amount of like commitment to have to like press the download as opposed to just like checking out our website. But down the road, if we're bigger, I think it makes sense to make the experience easier for people for sure.
That's awesome. So brand new company started in August of 2020. This is Grace Kennedy, the owner and founder of LiveLight. You can find her website at livelight.ca. Do check it out. Do start ordering from them. I've done it. I ordered some of their cookies. They're fucking delicious. I ate them in like one sitting. A lot of great packaging stuff we obviously talked about today. Do your best. And as you were saying earlier, you don't have to be perfect. But if you can make some strides to getting out there and, trying to contribute to helping these local companies, because you guys are dealing with local companies. So you're not only supporting them, you're supporting local businesses. And let's try to make this world a nice, cleaner place so our oceans aren't so littered with plastic. Thank you, Grace. Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And thanks for your interest. I'm really pumped that you guys had so many interesting questions and seem really in tune with this. And that was really pleasant surprise. So thanks, guys.